It's time for Breaking Chains with the P31 Ladies Night, where we will have open dialogue with our women on issues of personal, family, and more. It's Breaking Chains with the P31 Women on YAT Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone. I tell you, the enemy tried to stop this broadcast, but hey, when God says it will go forth, I'm just excited to be here. We have an awesome show tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I am Dr. Holden. I am the host for Breaking Chains Pop-On 31 Ladies Night. And so I want to say congrats to all the graduates from elementary, high school, college. I tell you, anytime we get a chance to go from different levels in our life, it's only to the glory of God that He has allowed us to see these little moments that's leading up to our purpose in life. So I just want to say congratulations again to all the graduates. My daughter graduated May 23rd on her 18th birthday from Thera High School. And this is where I met this my guest at. You know, her spirit was just sweet. There's something about her. And I just, once we got to talking, I said, wow, her story is awesome. And you all know that on Breaking Chains, Proverbs 31, I try to bring guests on that's going to encourage you, uplift you, and even maybe bring tips on awareness. So we're just going to dive right in. Let me go ahead and just tell you a little bit about my guest. I'm so excited.
Oh, my goodness. Demetria Mimi Harrison was raised in Kansas City, Missouri. At an early age, her life spiraling out of control. She dropped out of high school chasing the wrong dreams. Now Mimi is the CEO of Ball Status Publishing, and she's also a three-time published author. Get this, y'all. After serving an 80-month federal prison sentence that changed her life for the better, she is now a motivational speaker. Mimi is also the Missouri Ambassador for Dignity Campaign for Cut 50, who works to cut crime and incarceration on all 50 states. She loves sharing her story of how changing her thoughts changed her life. She wants to inspire someone else to do the same before they fall victim to the streets. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be a hot show tonight.
Mimi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you? And thanks for having me.
I am well. You know, I was reading over your bio, and I didn't ask you know how long you had served. I'm going, okay, I'm counting on my family, 8 months. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So you just have an awesome story. And on Breaking Chains, that's what we're here for, this broadcast. It's to break some chains, set some people free, and let them know they're not alone. So introduce us, just give us to get us going about who is Mimi and how did this journey for you begin?
Well, like she said, my name is Demetria Harrison, which everyone knows me more by Mimi. So, I was born and raised in the Midwest, Nebraska. Humble beginnings, went to church, was in church always. You know, I had a Pentecostal family. And my mom was a pathologist, my dad, truck driver. So pretty much I was kind of spoiled. And at the age of 13, my mom and dad divorced. And after that, we moved to Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri. And pretty much after that, it was like they split up. So I don't think I was getting all of the attention that I wanted. And I started doing things that I shouldn't have been doing, like stealing and just hanging out just at an early age.
And, wow. You know, are you the only child?
No, I'm the... on my mom's side, I'm the youngest of three. My brother was 56, rest in peace. He passed away while I was in prison. I'll talk about that. But, yes, and my sister is 52, so I'm the youngest. And my dad had a couple of daughters that's younger than me, but on my mom's side, I am the youngest. And I was small and just out of control for no reason. When you know
wow.
you can't blame your parents, how some of us blame our parents about something happened. I can't blame my parents for anything because they were great parents. I just went the wrong direction. So that with that being, what you say now?
No, I mean that's interesting, and I want people to hear that because I used to I was an RSA for City of Refuge, and so I was there like the night shift working with the young ladies and who came from just the street life of being in and out of jail, drugs, maybe prostitution, and I remember I came across one young lady, she's probably early 20s. And we were just talking, and basically that's, I was like, so what happened, what made you go down, the path, of drugs and just in and out of jail, did you have a rough life? And I was shocked. She was like, honestly, no. I came from a good parent, two-parent household. They gave me everything I wanted. I mean, everything was fine. I just did what I wanted to do, and that's, because a lot of times we just automatically assume that someone's out in the street cutting up or doing something. Oh, they must have neglected at home. They must, something was on. So just to hear that, so what would make a child who's getting the love and attention, what would make, what happened? Was it just you couldn't have the divorce, or what's the, maybe the environment? Tell us a little bit more what pulled you in that direction from which it was, how you was brought up.
Well, from what I was brought up, like I said, my family from my father's side to my mom, I have a God-fearing family. Everyone is all of my aunts, uncles, they're missionaries and ministers. So I had a really good coming up. I've never seen my mother or my father smoke in front of me, drugs. I've never seen any of that, or my aunties, because they're all in church like that. So it was just me going out of town, moving to another state, and for some reason I just started wanting things because my mom and dad gave me so much, and at first that was my excuse. Oh, well, they gave me this, that, now I want it. I didn't need it. I just wanted other things, so it had me stealing. So stealing went to selling drugs. Dealing with drug dealers. And after that, it was just like a no coming back, because it was like I wanted more and more and more and more and more. And
wow.
I had my mom, my mom would even say things like, what are you doing? Stop doing what you're doing, because I wasn't one to go to jail. I never, went to jail or anything until I ended up in federal prison with an 80-month prison sentence for fraud.
Wow. And when I met you, you just got this sweet, just demeanor, So I'm like, how did you survive the prison? You know how you meet somebody, you're like, oh my goodness, yes, your demeanor. We kicked it off for the first time. I think both our daughters graduated from Theral. And every time they had an event for the seniors, we were just some kind of way magically connected, and we were just there together, either sitting or chatting and taking pictures. So what was that like, looking back now? Is it more glamorized now, that life, that fast money life? I want you to talk to the younger people who's on maybe somebody's on a call, they have a child that's out there. Are there signs that parents, sometimes parents are like they don't see certain things, but are there signs that, that people can look out for to let them know, hey, maybe something's going wrong? There's, something that they can look out for, to maybe catch their children early? Was there something your parents, I'm pretty sure they tried to talk to you. They tried, what was it? That was the breaking point. Was it going to prison, or was you kind of want to slow up before then, or just that prison was that was God's way of, because sometimes with our parents, and you came from a praying family, a family that's missionaries, and I'm pretty sure somebody, hey, God, whatever you got to do, we don't want her, to die down the street, get our attention. But what were those points that you maybe can help a parent that's listening on the broadcast that maybe they can try to catch their kids early, you know, the warning signs that maybe the streets are getting, their, you know, their kids' attention?
A couple of warning signs. For one is, I'll say basically the first thing with parents, most parents, I'll say to all of us, sometimes we watch our kids do things that they are not supposed to do, and we take up for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to stop doing that because we enable them, and then it's like, oh, so if we're go if we're going to go for letting them do this, they know we're going to go for letting them do that. So now mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, so we might see them coming in like, where are you getting these new shoes from? And it's, oh, it's such and such. And we let that go. Somebody bought them for us, and now they're coming in with more and more. Those are signs that something is going on.
Okay.
And we don't pay any mind until sometime it's too late. And I just say communication, you know, with our kids. I had to learn that to where I always wanted to be the one to tell my children what to do. And I didn't
mm-hmm.
listen to them. And we have to listen to them because sometimes there's a message in what they're saying to us that they're crying out for help and we're not listening.
Wow, that is, whew. Well, take us to that time, you know, what led up to you doing, you know, getting this prison sentence? What was going on? What was your thought process? And were you in your early 20s? I mean, how long ago has this been? Are you recently released?
Very recently. I've never been to prison in my life. But the thing I did, I always was doing bad things. I mean, not, you know, pretty much.
Yeah.
Just selling drugs, doing just different things, and I thought I was slick. So it was like I watched a lot of people around me go to prison. In federal prison, but I'm like, oh, I'm not doing that. This time I'm not doing enough, or I'm doing this, I'm not going to get caught. So I thought I was slick. So I did it for years and years, and had not I went to prison, I probably never would have stopped. And had not I went to prison, I probably would be dead right now. So I say prison saved my life, but I'll say this, no amount of money in the world is worth being away from your family, because in the end, you do whatever, everything to please people. You be a people pleaser. You run around trying to help everybody, and now you got to maintain this lifestyle. And then when you go, it's nobody there for you. And I thank God, the family I have, the feds shipped me around the United States, and no matter where I went, my family was there. But I watched females that was there 20 and 25 years whose family was 50 miles away, and they never got a visit. So it's not worth it. It
wow.
wasn't worth it. So now I
Whoa.
Don't have all and I'm content. I'm happier with, like, not all the big things. Before I left here, I had a big $500,000 house. And now, you know, I'm happy with my regular car and just being me instead of trying to be everybody.
Wow. I mean, you're saying, oh, my goodness. I mean, it is, you know, you hear stories all the time about men going to prison or, you know, you meet a, but when you see a female, you know, that has taken that same route, oh, you know, just wow. Take us back to that time, you know, when you got caught, you're in that courtroom.
Okay. Oh, it's okay. So, like, 2010 of July 7th, 2010, I was picked up at my home by at least 20 federal agents and the Secret Service, everything, with guns drawn to my kids, you know, everything. My nephew there. So I got indicted, and they took me downtown Atlanta to Richard B. Russell. Then they read me my charges. I had 15 counts of fraud, and they said that I had I was on a $20 million airline. It was a fraud airline, $20 million fraud scheme or something. So, however, when this was 2010, so I fought the case, but I had to go back and forth to Missouri. So I was going through it. I cried. I prayed. I had never been in any trouble. Now I'm about to go to federal prison. And you know the federal prison, they play with you because now they want me to testify on a lot of people that I had no dealings with because they saying I'm something else that I'm not. And it was crazy. So in May of 2012, I was sentenced to 80 months in prison. And I had went to a program that helped me. I got out, though, in September 2016. So on the 80-month sentence, I did 4.5 years. And then I had got out. They wouldn't let me come back to Georgia. So this is why I tell the young ones or the older people, nothing is worth it. I had to go. I was still away from my child, my kid. My other two were grown, but it doesn't matter. I have grandkids, and I had, you know, my daughter that you know. So it was terrible to leave her at 11 years old and go to prison for 4.5 years. And thank God, like I said once again, my daughter and my mother kept her. So I watched kids, people lose their kids coming to prison. So in December, though, I was totally released. I'm no longer on probation. I'm totally finished with the federal stuff, and I'm totally finished with doing some illegal things because I need my family, and my family needs me.
If you can reiterate something you said, you can go back. I'm just being led by the Spirit because if someone needs to hear this, and then we'll see. We have some callers want to make a comment, but to let the people know who's thinking, okay, it's fast money, it's the life. You know, they think they're slicking them, but it's a can of oil. You know, I'm not going to get caught. I'm just, you know, and like you said, you have all these people around you when you got the money. So just tell them if you have sent a warning call, you know, just talk to us again. Send that call out, let people know. I think you were just saying, hey, it looks all good now when you got the money, you have people, but as soon as you get locked up, that dynamic changes. So just reiterate again on that part what you've seen. You know, and what is a part of that people with your friend loan, you know, everybody, your buddy, you got the house, the money, and cars. So just touch back on that a little bit.
Okay. As far as, like I said, I've watched several of my guy friends to myself take care of everybody, put the, you know, carry the world on our shoulders. And by the grace of God, it was just, hey, I did it from my heart. But when you go down and everything happened, everybody runs away. They don't know what's going on with your case. They call you snitches. They call you rats. And they don't know what's going on with you. But more than anything, everybody give up on you. So now your family's not coming around. And this is the thing that I tell I had to remind myself, though, nobody owes us anything. So if we put ourselves there, so we have to accept that responsibility. Some people couldn't get through that, and, you know, so I felt, hey, if they're not here when I really need them, they don't need to be here anyway.
That's right.
I had to accept responsibility for what I did. Instead of saying, oh, I did this for everybody and now they're not here. No, I had to do my time. And no, I'm coming home and I just have to do what I have to do. But it's no amount of money. I don't care. No amount of money is worth being behind them cold walls. When I say it's cold, it's lonely. It's, I don't care if your family coming to see you. You can't leave. So I tell people that's doing anything pretty much illegal and they think they can get away with it, you're going to get caught. Because what goes on in the dark comes out in the light.
Wow. I tell you, this is an awesome show. I mean, because, like I said, we got this. We just live in a world now where it's like that's what's glamorized. You know, that quick life, that drug, you know, dealer, you know, lifestyle, the money, the chains, and I guess, you know, it's just more out in the open with social media, the rappers, and so I tell you, is there a caller on the line and they want to make a comment or ask a question to Demetria? Caller, are you there?
Hello, this is Dr. Michelle. I'm just tuning in. I'm late.
Oh, hey, Dr. Michelle, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. So you just got on the line? You just catching the call now?
Yes, ma'am. I hadn't heard anything. I just tuned in.
Okay. Awesome. Is there another caller that want to make a comment or ask a question to Demetria? So we, just for the callers that are just tuning in, we're going to do just a quick recap. Demetria, known as Mimi, did 4.5 years of an 80-month prison sentence. Great parents, come from a loving missionary family. Parents gave her, you know, supported her, you know, whatever she needed and wanted in life, but just chose to go down a different path than the one she was raised in. So her story, and just her telling people it's not what it seems like. You know, when you're out here and you got the cars and the houses and you think you'll never get caught, like she said, whatever's done in the dark will come to light. And 4.5 years away from, three children, two were grown, but you had a daughter that was 11 years old. She just graduated from high school. So during that time, did you incarcerated for 4.5 years? Did your relationship, did you get back close to God? Or what was that time like in those 4.5 years?
With that 4.5 years, I got closer to God most definitely. And in there, we have church. So it's pastors and everything come from, like, I was close to Orlando, then I was in Illinois, so pastors come in. We have church, so I've always been close to God. I couldn't have did that sentence without him. So, you know, he kept me and he kept my family together, you know. So me and my children, we are really close. And I think that might even put us together even closer because it made me a better mom. Because I know, you know, before I went, I wasn't the best mom. I was there physically, but I wasn't there mentally.
So what advice would you give to those who might be listening in and they might have a loved one on the call, you know, I mean incarcerated, and they're listening, they might, you know, what advice would you give to them? Oh, like you said, although, you know, it's time for the, you know, whoever do the crime, take their responsibility. But you mentioned something that was just pretty, you know, just awesome, where you had a loving support system. You saw a lot of other women that didn't have it. So what are some advice that you can give to someone who might have someone that's behind, you know, that's incarcerated?
I'll say for one, four words, 42 cent stamp and a 99 cent card means it more than anything, sometimes even money. And just to tell someone to keep your head up, because the one thing I know, I went to prison and I met some of the best women that I've ever met in prison. Today, one is right now just wrote a book with Jared Kushner. She's one of the, she is breaking barriers, and I just tell everybody, just because we went to prison, we're not bad people. We're not bad people. We made a mistake. It's a lot of people out here have done a lot of things probably like us, but they just didn't get caught. So don't just just outcast your people. They're not dead. They're in jail. And, you know, just show them some love every now and then. Send them a book. If it's a book that you might like to read, send them a book. This is a self-help book or anything, words of encouragement. It money, it's not about money all the time. It's just about to just show some love and support. That right there just makes somebody's day.
Wow, I can only imagine, you know, what it's like when it's time to get mail and, you know, you're there, you know, like you said, in that cold cell, but when it comes time to get a mail, you know, which I have mail check or, you know, I've never been incarcerated, but I can just imagine, you know, when you see everybody getting letters and you're sitting there without a letter or, you know, a card. And so, wow, I could just.
And it's in Illinois, it was mandatory that we go to mail call. So I don't care if it was zero, five below zero, they still had to go to mail call, and they knew they would never get mail.
Oh my! So I tell you, so people, I mean, if you're out there, if you want to know, you know, and that's why I believe ministry starts here. I think a lot of people want to go across, you know, the world. You know, if you can start, you know, maybe a group where you're writing letters is there a way where people can just write letters to prisoners? You don't have to know them personally, or you have to know people personally?
No, you can just write a letter. You know, you can just write certain people because, I mean, it's just so many women. They need that support.
Okay.
And
it's
some really good, it's a lot of good women in prison. You know, I met several. I mean, it's always going to be some bad. We all did bad. Like I said, I admit up to what I did. I take totally responsibility, but I'm still not a bad person. And I'll say one last thing if I can. The reason it's you miss so much of all everything of life. And my brother passed away and my sister passed away when I was in prison. So that was devastating.
I thought I read somewhere, forgot what site it was on, where they're now, I don't know if you heard, they're now passing a law where they let inmates, I guess if you don't have a real, you know, somebody like not a murderer or something, you know, but where they're now allowing some inmates to go to funerals of loved ones, you know. I think that'll be great, you know. I mean, like you said, to be there, you know, if you're not someone that's really a threat to community, you know, to society, that if your mom or someone close to you is dying, you know, that they will allow you to go to their funerals or, you know, to see them before they pass. So tell us about this ambassador. Go ahead.
I went to my brother's. Yes, we pay. But, I mean, if you live far and that funeral and you got to pay for security and everything, you don't have people don't have money in there. So now you can't get there because you have to pay for the guards and everything. And by the grace of God with me, the counselor was actually on duty guard, and we were really cool with each other. She took me on the day that she worked, so she never charged me to pay. I didn't pay to go. All I paid was for the gas. So it just worked in my favor, but I didn't get to go to my sister's.
Okay. Now, you said no matter where they, I guess, you know, transported you to, your family was always there. Were they just made sure that someone came and visit, or they just made, you know, you got a, they made one, you be able to call home, or what kind of support system did you have in place?
Oh, they came and visit. Everywhere I went, I had visits, always. And, I mean, I got to call, we get to email, and, you know.
Okay.
It's not bad, but it's totally not good. It's terrible.
Exactly.
It's cold and it's lonely. That's about sums it up. And I don't know how people go right back. I'm sorry to each their own, but I don't want to go back.
Yeah, that is not a place I want to return to, you know. So I see your ambassador for, is 50, is that in Missouri, something to help bring awareness to incarceration? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, well, Cup 50 is I work with Dignity. That's my friend Topeka Sam. She was in prison also. She was like on 100, she had like 100 months, like 15 years, but she got out. So it's Dignity is for incarcerated women. Cup 50, we're working with Van Jones. Van Jones, he's on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I'm working with Cup 50, and we're just working on, like, the mass incarceration, and I'm the ambassador for Missouri, so we go around and we try to get the law, different laws passed for incarceration and for women for mass incarceration. Yeah.
So can you what kind of laws y'all working on for the women that's incarcerated?
Well, they just had passed one about the women can't be handcuffed while they're being transported, and like women can't be handcuffed while they're having babies, because you know they were handcuffing women while they were having babies.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
And also, so, like, sanitary napkins in the prisons instead of them buying them, they need to have them because they get like $40,000 a year for one person.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did they do before? So you said that the prisoners had to buy the sanitary napkins?
Yeah. Oh, we had to buy them. Different prisons give them to you, and different ones they make you purchase them. And people can't afford it. Those women, we're in there working for 23 cents.
Mm.
An hour, so 23 cents, you know, they get a check at the end of the month, it's $12, $15. They need shampoo, they need, you know, a little food.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, so somebody's on the line and they want to help with Cut 50?
Yes.
And they want to help with that project, how would they, be able to do that?
What state are you in?
You know, we're in Atlanta, so.
Oh, okay. If she can, tell her to just look up on it on Cup 50. You go on just Google Cup 50, and then she can read up on it pretty much, and because it's different. One, like, it's Dignity, and then it's some for men, some for women, but all over the United States. So, and I can give her my email as well, and, I can speak with her.
Well, let me ask you, so tell us, so you're a three-time published author. When did this happen? Did it happen during, did you write the books when you was, incarcerated? Or tell us about these three books and when did you begin writing?
I started writing in 2010. And actually, I was always saying that I was going to write a book through the years. And I did it. And it took for me to, actually, that took for me to go to prison. I mean, when I got indicted, I just started writing. So before I went to prison, I wrote a book. And it was an autobiography. I didn't know what I was doing, and I just wrote. And I published it, and then once I got in prison, I published another one, which the first one is called She Just Like Me. She's Just Like Me. And it was like pretty much a me into the street life and how everything really, it's a really pretty good book. Then I wrote one called Yearning for Yuri. I wrote that when I was in prison and got it published. And when I came home, I released the sequel of it, Yuri's Vengeance. So
okay.
And I have like two other books that I've been haven't supposed to get out, and I haven't. So
Yearning for Yuri. What is that about?
Actually, it's fiction, and it's just about, basically, it's about a female that had everything, which she's nothing like me. I don't know what made me write that. Maybe everything for her family. Her family is her mom's a attorney. Her dad's a doctor. And for some reason, she is a firecracker. She's looking for love in all the wrong places.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me see if we have a caller on. Caller, are you there? You can go ahead, caller, if you want to ask Demetra a question or make a comment.
Dr. Hello. Logan, this is Dr. Michelle again.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to know, how long have you been out now?
I've been out since got out September of 2016.
Okay. So how do you cope with the differences of being incarcerated? I know you were out longer than you were in, but being incarcerated, and I know a lot of things changed with you. How did you cope with that once you got back out into society?
Well, pretty much that's still a struggle. It's like when I came back, especially being back in Atlanta, I had to readjust everything that I was doing because that lifestyle, like I said, just I could go in a mall, like, go buy a $3,000 or $4,000 bag, shoes. So I had to stay away from people that trigger me, a lot of people that I might get those triggers from, for one.
Mm-hmm.
And that, more than anything, that was my number one struggle. Now it's like, okay, I'm just, you know, I'm content with what I have because I wasn't. I came home in the pride, like, with the car I had to drive. And then, now it's like, hey, it is what it is. So it wasn't easy, but it's better now. And I try to deal with people that are more positive and not doing the wrong thing.
And how did you deal with, last week we talked about emotional stress and depression,
mm-hmm.
anxiety, and all. How did you deal with that? Are you dealing with that now?
Yeah, I still deal with it, but now it's more of to where my thought process, I can catch my irrational thoughts sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm thinking too irrational, I try to replace them. I do positive affirmations. I fast. I do a lot of different things to try to stay on track. But more than anything, I just try to keep my thoughts intact. Because that is that more than anything.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yes.
Dr. Michelle, she said, Demetria said something, if you can just, those triggers, and I know you're a licensed counselor, if you could just speak, that was very important, you know, people think they can still, you know, whether it's,
mm-hmm.
if you're leaving the old crowd, you can still hang around certain people, those triggers, I like how Demetria, she had to realize, you know, what her triggers was. So from a professional standpoint, could you just maybe, you know, talk just a little bit, you know, on those triggers and how, and that was just a good point that she made, that she had to recognize her triggers and how to stay away from them.
And also I was going to let her know that was a great word to use, your triggers, because usually that's what the relapse is really about, is your triggers, because it's going to be that one thing or those things that had you in the position that you were in anyways. And so like she said, you have to have a conscious mind of yourself to stay away from those things that's going to trigger you to go back to what it was that you just came out of. That's just like a a drug addict. Once you've been clean and you're sober and you cannot go back to those same places that you've gone before, because believe me, being strong, we can say that we're strong, but that one trigger, it could be the smell of the drugs.
Uh-huh.
That would just trigger that, and that habit form that's in the inside of you, with your chemical imbalances and all of that. And that's why I try to encourage people, when they pray to God to take the taste away from me,
uh-huh,
ask God to take the desire away from you. Because if you don't have a desire for it, you won't have the taste for it.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow. That's awesome. That is something.
Yeah.
That was good. And you, something just said, Dr. Michelle, just a lot of people think, well, I'm good now. You know, I've never done drugs. I was married to a guy that did drugs, and that was my first time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know nothing about street life. I just been a little housewife all my life.
Right.
That was my first time. You know, going through that. So when he got clean, I'm thinking, well, Lord, thank you. You know, I don't know. I didn't know nothing about, you know, relapse and you know, and so that's what it was. I think, you know, he just got comfortable. Those, I'm good now. I haven't had a drink in or did drugs in 3 months. But it's like you said, it's that when you got to be real with yourself, you're not strong enough like you think that you can still go back around certain neighborhoods or certain environments.
Absolutely. And as she said,
if
she's walking through the mall and she's seeing these things, you know, and that's a trigger for her, because those were the things that got her into the position that she was in.
Exactly.
So,
you know,
she's coping. She's coping.
Exactly. And the people, the females that I was around, they're still doing this. They're, and I'm not saying they're doing anything illegal. Their guys are fast football players and everything, but they're doing this. But I can't do that, and I don't have that, so I have to, you know, live my regular life and be happy and content with it. So I choose to just, I don't isolate myself, but I just stay away, try to stay away as much as I can from that lifestyle.
And and with that, I can say that you have been rehabilitated, because, as you said, you do not want to go back.
Yeah.
And that was the point. That was the point.
Yes, ever.
Of your rehabilitation. Okay. And then owning up, you know, to what you did do. Because you could have denied it and still have got your sentence.
Yes.
And not own up to what you have done.
That's right. And a lot of people do that, and I just tell them, hey, we wouldn't be here if we didn't do it. I mean, you know, it's some innocent people, but I know I wasn't.
There are. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But more not than so.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I commend you, and I pray that God would continue to give you the strength that you need, that he would continue to cover you, and that he would continue to just give you peace within your soul, that you would continue to walk in the way that you're walking now, to go back and help someone else, because that's the true ministry right there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah,
that you're going back to help someone else. And I commend you. And I give you the honor, and I just want you to know that there is someone in your corner. You might not know, but there is someone in your corner who's praying for you daily.
Yes.
And
yes,
just continue to walk in the way that you're walking, and God is going to manifest in your life in a way that you would never have even thought about.
Oh, thank you, Lord.
Because he took you through that. He took you through that for a reason. And believe me, sweetie, it wasn't for you.
Yes. He took me to save my life. Yes, he did.
So that you could come back and save another's life.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Michelle, for calling in. You know, that's what it's about. You know, just uplifting and encouraging. So Demetria, what would you say now, before, you know, we start wrapping up, just words of encouragement, maybe somebody's on the phone, on the call, and they have, a sentence. Now, do the charges drop? That'll be for everything that's not on your record? I mean, because I know people have problems getting jobs coming out, and like Dr. Michelle said, that depression cycle. So to give about 2-3 tips, just a word of encouragement to those who may just recently been released and they don't know where to start over because they've been, years away from society.
First thing, we have to forgive ourselves. Whatever's going on, I feel, in our lives, whatever was, let the past be the past. If you have asked God to forgive you, we are forgiven because He's the only one can judge us. Forgive yourself, love yourself, take responsibility for whatever. I just feel we have to start taking responsibility for what we do. And another thing, we have to stop being so prideful and listen. Sometimes we feel somebody is telling us something and they hating on us when all they doing is looking out for us. A hard head make a soft butt. So, start listening. I don't care how old you are. We can learn something from a kid just like they learn from us, but sometimes we just don't like to listen. And that's what I say, listen to your kids. Listen to them. Go to their school. Get involved. Because right now, like you said, with the social media and everything else, these streets do not love anybody.
Wow. Yeah. You said a mouthful right there. And I just bless you. Like I said, ever since I met you, your spirit just is, is sweet. And so when I read the story, you could just tell that, you just have a praying family that loved you. They didn't give up on you. And we just see just the beauty in you. I mean, the whole time we've been on this broadcast, I've heard you more than once say, I take full responsibility for my actions, it wasn't blaming nobody. Right. You didn't blame, you told the truth. I came from a good home, a good family. Matter of fact, didn't pass blame.
My mother is still working. My mother is 74. She's a histology pathologist. She's still working. I've been covered. All I can say is thank you, Lord.
Dr. Holden, she makes the good money.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Yes. All the kids are grown now. So what is this new? I mean, you're an empty nester. Your last baby just graduated from a high school. So what are you going to do now? You've done your time. You got your books out. What is next for you, on this path of greatness?
Just like Dr. Michelle said, if I can just help one person, that's all I want. I don't care about money doing it. I speak with women. I talk with kids. And if I can help one person and to not end up to where I ended up and dealing with drug dealers and being belittled and just to fit in, that's all I want to do.
Wow.
Awesome. Well, Demetria, before we wrap up, tell us where people can buy your books or if they want you to come and speak at their event. So give us some of your information if people wanted to contact you. And are you on social media? And if you are, what are your social media platforms?
Instagram is Boss Status Publishing or Boss Status Pub. Also, they're all Boss Daddy Pugs. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all the handles are Boss Daddy Pugs. And
okay.
you can the books are on Amazon.com.
Awesome. So they just type in your name, Demetria.
Yes.
So how would they find you on Amazon?
Just if you type in Demetria Harrison or Mimi Harrison, the book's going to come up. Now, my nightmare might come up too. It pops up when you put my name. I really want to work on getting that off, but when you pull it up, it's either going to be the books or that. So
okay. Okay, let me just see. Let me make sure we don't have another caller who wants to make a comment or question. Caller, are you there? Caller, if you have a question or comment for Demetria, your line is open. Okay, maybe they're shy. Caller. Okay, so how can they contact you?
Somehow somebody just got into my website. They can get in touch with me at HarrisonMimi54@gmail.com.
Spell that for the listeners, Mimi.
Okay, HarrisonMimi, MIMI54@gmail.com.
Awesome. Hey,
and
I
for the
thank you.
Lady
mm-hmm,
with the Cup 50, if she would email me, I can, you know, we need help down here in Georgia with some of these laws and, you know, just to
okay,
get people
okay.
out to support the women, you know, for incarceration.
So if you're on the line, if you want to, you know, get involved with, you know, maybe that's your way of giving back, you know, hooking up with Mimi and her, you know, the Cup 50 here in Atlanta to see how you can help get the law, the advocate down at the dome, you know, down there, and you're down there with the legislators and the politicians and people who make things, lawmakers, you know. So if you want to get involved, get in touch with her. You know, that's what it's about. It's not everybody don't, you know, sometimes people try to wait for the big thing. I wanna be no, start right where you are. If you want to get involved, if you have a family member that was incarcerated and you're trying to figure out how can I do more, you say it's Cut 50?
Yes, and it's Van Jones, it's his organization. So it's so many, like Kim Kardashian and Common and Meek Mill. They are all affiliated with it. So we're all trying to help and make a change.
Okay, so do y'all have a certain group? Someone, do y'all have like a group that, you know, someone wanted to come and join or a support group for this? Or do y'all have times y'all meet monthly?
Yeah, basically, we meet on the website. So, we meet through group chats and Zoom. So if someone wanted to just look into it, I would just say, you know, go to cup50.org.
Okay, cup50.org. I'll post that when we get out the broadcast so they can follow up. Hey, I want to thank you, my beautiful sister, you know, for taking your time out calling. You have shared just your story is inspiring. You've shared the wealth of just knowledge to parents, and you just kept it real, you know. Don't let the glam fool you, you know.
Right.
You know, and, you know, what looks like this one day, you know, you have all the people around you and everybody's your friend. But like what they say, I think they say you'll find out who your real friends are, let you get sick or go to jail. You'll find out or lose everything, you know.
Mm.
You really find out who your friends are. And I think you pointed that out, that, you know, when you had the big house and the cars, the money, you know, people was around. But when you got incarcerated,
yes,
those friends, it's like, okay, where everybody at, you know. Now, so the street definitely don't love you.
That's
nowhere
right
to be found.
The young ones that's trying to keep up with them people on the ground, trust me, half of them are homeless.
Wow.
A lot of them are lot of them are homeless, so, you know, that's the thing you got to know. You're probably doing better than them, so just do you.
Wow. Mm. Y'all heard? Right here on Breaking Chains. Don't let the social media fool you.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That was good.
Absolutely.
Oh,
thank you
right.
for meeting me so much. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you.
Oh,
no problem. I'm looking forward to, you know, coming out volunteering and you know, if y'all need some hands at the Capitol, I'm definitely looking forward to being, you know, just coming out, you know, if I just got to pass out flyers or call some lawmakers, I'm definitely
absolutely
being part of that. So, hey, you all, thank you again. We have tuned in. We had another awesome show this Wednesday with Demetria Mimi Harris, and she shared her awesome story from prison to purpose. And that's what it's about, using those stepping stones, those our mistakes, and allowing God to get the glory from our life. You know, that's what it's about. She said, I did that time. I'm not going back. You know, sometimes there are some people who want to, you know, hey, I don't want to hit my head 2 or 3 times. You know, it's certain things. You're like, okay, God, that was enough. I got that picture. You know, I don't want to go around that mountain again.
Absolutely.
You know,
yes.
And so I just thank you. It was a joy meeting you and your beautiful daughter. We just enjoyed the whole senior wet week. You and I, every time they had something, we was there. And we just had the pleasure of seeing our daughters graduate from high school. And they're off. And she's on her way to where, Mimi?
Excuse me?
Your daughter, she's on her way to what college?
Albany State.
Awesome, awesome. What's she majoring?
I want political science.
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
Yes, and I wanted to say one more thing. Thank you so much because you didn't know my story and you took to me like you knew me and, you know, people judge and you didn't even know, but I really appreciate that, and I felt the love and the sincerity. And when you had said something when I read your card, I was like, she don't know my story, but she is so kind. And that's what people need. Time. People have to. We got to start being kind to people.
Yes.
And that's I we sat next to each other in the auditorium. I think they were having college signing day, and once we got talking, I said, you know, and that's what it's about, love and compassion for others, you know, giving a sister or brother a chance to come and share your platform with people is not, you know, just that, Lord knows,
right.
He has delivered me for so much, you just want to share what he does with you with others, so I just want to thank you again for taking your time. I know you were doing some little traveling right after, graduation and taking time out, being in the last minute, you know,
yes.
Just met with 2 weeks ago, but I just knew when I met you, and I just wanted to love on you and just, I don't know, I just did on sisters. You know?
Thank you
so much. You're more than welcome. Hey, you guys, tune in next week here, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank my sponsor, Swagger Magazine. Hey, they reached out to me, and they like what I'm doing. They said, hey, we want to partner with you. And so they help promote the show. I want to thank Pastor Rod for giving me this opportunity to host Breaking Chains Proverbs 31 Ladies Night. And, again, thank you all. Tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. See you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Chains with the P31 Women on YAT Radio. Tune in next week, same time.
Go to our website,
blogtalkradio.com/YAT Radio, or call in 858-357-9137. It's Breaking Chains, YAT Radio, where we leave a mark that can't be erased by breaking the chains of silence.